called The Watchtower. U2 covering Hendrix. For those of you who don't know, too young to know. Almarine Radio continues on a Tuesday morning here on the All Warrior Radio Network, and privileged to be joined by the first Sergeant Major that will join the program, who will soon be followed by the second Sergeant Major to join this program, but Sergeant Major Brian Zikafoos of the 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force, a battle buddy times one, joins me. So, Sergeant Major, first of all, good morning. Thanks for doing this.
Morning. How you doing today?
I'm all right. The first of all, we got to find out something about you, okay? So let's start. Where were you born and raised?
I was born and raised in Omaha, Nebraska.
Right smack dab in the middle of the heartland.
Right. I was born in Iowa, in Ames, Iowa, but raised pretty much in Nebraska from fifth grade on.
Gunnar Musselman just drove through Iowa and did nothing but badmouth it. This is his criticism. Memo to Iowa, plant a tree. It's good for the environment. Like, what the hell happened in Iowa? Did the farmers rip out all the trees? Or, you know, he's pissed off anyway. But what's the deal in Iowa? No trees?
You know what Iowa stands for, right?
No. No, I don't. Go ahead.
Idiots out wandering around. That's why I'm still wandering.
Here was his joke. You know why Iowa's south of what did he say? You know why the Mississippi flows from Minnesota to Iowa?
Why?
Iowa sucks.
I actually like Iowa. It's hard place to hunt because you gotta hunt with a shotgun, I think, still.
Well, you wanna know why? You cut a round loose, that stuff's so flat it'll go forever.
Exactly.
Somebody gonna get killed. It might not be what you intended, but somebody else going to get it. Anyway, so born and raised there. Where do you go to high school?
A place called Millard North in Omaha, Nebraska.
All right, so you're a Midwest, Nebraska, Iowa guy. How does the Marine Corps get on your radar?
My buddy was joined. There's about 13, about four or five of us who were thinking about the military. And one of them joined the Marine Corps and the rest joined the Army. And I followed suit with the Marine Corps. He went to boot camp the month before I did. And the day, about 2 days before I was about to ship out to recruit training, he gets shipped back again for some reason. Don't know why. Probably because he was freaking fat, but freaking,
You know what? Paul Gage tells the exact same story. He's rolling around Vermont. He's got a bushy beard, like he's 18. He's buying beer for everybody in town, and he's the man driving around in his Camaro or some nonsense. And this fat buddy's like, I don't know what he's doing. He goes, well, hey, what are you doing? He goes, I'm joining the Marine Corps. Gage said, what? Yeah, I'm joining the Marine Corps. So Gage goes down to the recruiter and says, I want to do what he's doing. He said,
exactly what I did. And then I said, hey, you know what? I want to be a grunt. I want to be an infantry guy.
And then Gage said, the next week, he said, I'm getting ready to leave. He said, but I want to go now. And he said, well, he's leaving tomorrow. You can't go with him, but we can get you, like, in, like, 2 weeks. And Gage was like, all right, that's fine. So he says, like, 3 days before he leaves, the fat dude's back. Like, hey, man, what are you doing here? He goes, man, they kicked me out.
I was in delayed entry for a year. I joined when I was 17. I just turned 8. What is it? I turned 7. I was 17 years old when I joined August 5th in 1984. And then I shipped August 6th of 1985.
But no Marine Corps in your family? So why the Marine Corps? You go down to the recruiter. You know, you got the whole gamut in front of you. You're a tough guy from Iowa, Nebraska. Why the Marine Corps?
So, just like I tell all Marines when I talk to them, I said, we joined the Marine Corps, for the challenge, to be the toughest, be the badasses. And I think that's why I joined, because, I had something to prove to myself and to my family that, hey, I wasn't just a, you know, 128-pound soaking wet kid from Nebraska. You know, I don't think I graduated like 128 pounds, too.
No way. Don't forget, we joined it for the chicks, too, because that's the uniform, man. That's a complete hookup. All right, so you had to boot camp, and what do you think? Is it for you when you get there? Or do you think, what the hell did I do to myself? Or did you know it was a good thing from the start?
So I get there, and like I'm, you know, it's all night affair, you know, freaking. You go through, get your hair cut, and everything stinks and it's nasty, and you know. Get about an hour of sleep that first night, and we go to the chow hall, and I go in the chow hall, and it's just like I couldn't eat nothing because nothing tastes good. You go outside, and this kid jumps off the third deck and freaking, you know, feet first, lands on his feet, definitely breaks a leg, and all I see is this drill sergeant run over to him, tell him, you know, get up, get up, get up. I'm like, oh, my God, what the hell did I get into?
The craziest people I've ever met are in charge. Now what?
I mean, I thought, I didn't know what I'd gotten into at that point. And, but, you know, as time transitioned, you know, freaking, it got easier and easier. And, you know, just kind of went through the flow and made things happen.
What, so did you know you wanted to be a grunt before you joined? How did you figure that out?
Because, you know, I wanted to fight. I really had this mentality that I wanted to fight. And, you know, kind of read a little bit about Beirut and stuff like that before I joined, and Marines were over there. I figured that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to fight. And that's how I was kind of a knucklehead in high school, trying to be a tough guy, but really wasn't that tough. Got my butt whipped a few times.
Hey, this is All Marine Radio. You could say ass.
Got my ass whipped a few times.
There you go.
And, wanted to be tough. And I figured that's what when I went there, you know, they go, I made them sign an infantry contract. I wanted infantry. I would not.
Oh, you didn't go open contract?
Infantry on it.
Wow. Were you a shooter and a gun guy back then? Because I know you're pretty adept at that stuff now. Did you grow up with guns?
Yes, I grew up shooting. You know, my grandfather taught me how to shoot squirrels when I was a little kid. You know, he'd give me two bullets and tell me, hey, go shoot a squirrel. And it'd be like an all-day affair because he'd only give me two dang bullets to shoot. And so I'd go out and usually get at least one. If not two, that in a day.
Or else?
And, I just didn't get more than two bullets a day. That's it.
Well, did you ever come home with zero? And what would your grandfather say if you came home with zero?
You just talk trash. Talk mad trash. You'll learn how to shoot someday.
Exactly. My guest this morning is the Sergeant Major of 2MAP, Sergeant Major Brian Zickerfuss. First of all, I have to admit to you, why do I think your name is Zickenfuss? Is that just me being stupid, or does everybody, do a lot of people think that?
No, I think there's a bunch of different pronunciations of it, you know, and if you hear it one way, people tend to say it that way. So,
idiot.
You know, I've heard it Zickerfuss, Zickenfuss, Zickafuss, Zickyfuss.
So you just answer to it, yeah, that's me. Yeah, you can imagine how McNamara gets butchered. McNamara, yeah, like, hey, that ain't me. Okay, first of all, you know, come close. Get in the five ring with the pronunciation, and then we'll talk about it. So talk to me about a couple of people that have influenced your Marine Corps career. And I'm not going to let you mention 17 guys and say, oh, if I leave somebody out, blah, 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 blah. But give me a couple of people that made a huge dent in your head relative to being a Marine and being a Marine Corps leader.
So, you know, obviously, freaking, it's probably what I ended up going to security forces. Okay, so when I went to ITS back then, not SY, Infantry Training School, I was the honor grad out of ITS. So they said, hey, you're going to security forces. And I'm like, what? What security forces? Don't worry about it. You're going to security forces. But I'm an infantry guy. And he says, hey, it's infantry. You go back to the infantry. You just go into security forces first. It wasn't actually security forces. It's called barracks duty back then. But they sent me to Yorktown, Virginia. And so fly out to Yorktown, Virginia, you know, and gets put in second squad or second platoon out there. And there's a there was a sergeant who was coming from the infantry. And his name was Sergeant Temporelli. And the guy I looked up to, like, man, this guy's like the greatest squad leader in the world. I mean, he had a meritorious mass on his wall. This is, it said, he killed a sniper in Beirut with an M203 grenade launcher. And I thought that was the greatest thing in the world. This, I mean, he just impressed me in his presentation, and, you know, it's kind of who I wanted to be, right?
Right.
So he later got killed in a car wreck.
Yeah.
But that was the kind of guy I freaking, at that point, I was like, hey, I want to be this sergeant. I want to be this guy. So later on, I finally get to the infantry. it's funny. So back in those days, you could drink on base, right?
Right.
So this is kind of a funny story how this kind of worked out. I'm going to tell you this because it probably shouldn't, but I'm going to tell you anyway.
Go ahead. We love these stories.
So I'm at our E Club on base in Yorktown, Virginia, and I end up getting in a fight.
Yeah. Well, you know, let me just tell you, for those of you who are too young to remember this, E Club's just about on every base camp as a way of keeping Marines on the camp, and, if, you know, they were going to show their ass. They were going to do it where we could control it, not out in town. And there was a lot of, at that time, there was a lot of places you could drink at the age of 18.
Yeah.
And so in California, I know, out of Camp Pendleton, they did it because they didn't want Marines going to Mexico and getting drunk. So you could drink at 18 on base here. And let me just tell you, so as the OOD, you had to be outside that thing at, I can't remember what time it closed, midnight or 1. And you had barracks furniture going through the windows, Marines going through the windows. And what was really interesting about those places were the girls that went into them. Like, who the hell is coming here, man? And do your parents know you're here? And so it was a kind of the young man's wild west, man. If you were going to look for trouble, you could find it down there in a heartbeat. So enter young. Now, what year is this?
This is still like, this is probably 86.
86. And you're now 20, 21?
No, I'm still 19 years old.
19 years old. All right, 19 years old, 1986, at a E Club in what camp?
In Yorktown, Virginia.
All right, go ahead.
So I get in this massive fight, end up beating up this guy, pretty bad. I go back to my room the next morning. The first sergeant is knocking on my hatch. I go down there, and you know, I just got orders to 3rd Battalion, 9th Marines. And he was like ready to get, you know, he's ready for me to go. I guess it must have been 87 because it is about 24 months into it.
Okay.
And so, you know, I had orders in a couple weeks. I was leaving. You know, I go down to the first sergeant's office and there's a 6105 right there for me, a letter there. And you go, read it. I read it, and it says something like, hey, that you had an alcohol-related incident.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, First Sergeant, I know I was drinking, but it was a fight. Can you at least put the fight piece into the 6105? And he looked at me like I had a hole in my head. It's sign it, or I'm going to NJP you. So I signed it, and that's my first 6105. And I was pissed because it didn't say anything about fighting it. You know, hey, I could live with the fighting piece and put, you know, have a stain in my record. But the alcohol piece, yeah, I was drinking, but it was really a fight, not that I was drinking. But that's a...
that's a sign of a confused human being right there, right?
I know. So, anyways, later on, I get to 3rd Battalion, 9th Marines, and it was a different world out there, too. I went from most of the guys that went to ITS, there was a couple guys that were in the infantry, in that infantry platoon with me. They remembered me. So it wasn't like I was a new guy coming in.
Right.
But in reality, I was, because freaking, man, I thought, what the hell did I get into again? And
now, where was 3-9 at that time?
3-9 was in Mateo. They were part of 7th Marines.
Living the good life at Camp Mateo.
Yeah, nice. So Mateo was a good life because you had Senate Committee right out the gate.
You bet.
And then I turned 21 about, you know, 6-8 months into that out there in 3-9.
Uh-oh.
And then, you know, lived my life pretty well out there.
So I want two names. What was that sergeant's name who you said made a big dent in you in terms of the one who was killed in a car accident? What was his name?
Sergeant Temporelli.
Sergeant Temporelli. So give me a second name of a guy who impacted you in a big way in terms of your leadership style and turning the light on in you about what it was to be either a Marine or a leader in the Marine Corps.
So, okay. So I get when I'm checking into 3-9.
Right.
I go into the S2 shop, and there's a Marine in there, and he's, you know, when I was in barracks duty, you know, I looked at, you know, I was a good shooter, I always shot well, you know, I wanted to be a DM, you know, I wanted to be a sniper, so I'm in the S2 shop, and I go, hey, how do I get in the stay platoon, because Sergeant Temporelli was a stay guy, he's got surveillance target acquisition platoon, they changed those stayed turned into scout snipers later on.
Right.
And so there's a guy across the desk, and he goes, where are you coming from? And I go, Yorktown, Virginia. And he goes, aw, barracks pussies. I'm like, what? So later on, I take the scout sniper in, Doc, and the same guy that freaking called me a barracks pussy takes me into the platoon. We become damn good friends, and he becomes one of my best mentors. And we end up going to sniper school together. And I pretty much followed that guy around for years after that fact. And that was, at the time, was Sergeant Barrett. So, Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps later on in life.
Well, let me tell you, if you got to be called a pussy by somebody, at least...
Might as well be somebody freaking like that, right?
Exactly. At least somebody who can walk the walk. So you meet him as, what are you, a lance corporal? And he's
Yeah, I'm a lance corporal, and he's a sergeant.
Wow.
So I pick up corporal, get into the scout sniper, or the stay platoon back then, surveillance target acquisition platoon. He picks up staff sergeant shortly after that, and we go to sniper school, and he becomes the platoon sergeant, and eventually I take over the platoon. But we ended up going to the Gulf War together. I followed him. He went down to the drill field. I went to the drill field. He went to sniper school in Quantico, and I followed him to sniper school in Quantico.
So really, Barrett's the man. You're just copying his ass your whole career. Here, we think you're squared away. You're just copying Barrett the whole time.
So I eventually break off from him because I figured that's what people were thinking.
But you know what? Hey, Sergeant Major, you know what's interesting, though? I mean, because in your career, you know, Marines come under the spell of different people, you know, and you know this, for you to cross paths with a guy like that as a lance corporal, to have that kind of a guy as a mentor, I mean,
he's a stud, man. I mean, he's got a photographic memory as a sergeant. He remembers things like off the top of his head, like you can't believe. He's a PT stud, and freaking, he's just the kind of guy you want to emulate, right?
Right, right.
So I literally freaking, you know, I call this guy up for advice all the time. I'm, you know, I mean, he's my mentor all the way through the Marine Corps. Even today, you know, I would not hesitate to call him any questions I ever had. And,
so you're just a schmo. He's the man. Who knew? Who friggin' knew? My guest this morning is the, a battle buddy from Afghanistan. from one of the best units I ever deployed with, and that is RCT-1, Sergeant Major Brian Zikafus. And he's gracious enough to give up a little bit of his time this morning to join us. We're talking about who made a lasting imprints on him and how he got to be where he is. Let's talk about your combat tours. First one you go to war is the Gulf War?
Yeah, first major action is the Gulf War.
Give me a lesson learned. And so what unit you're with, 3-9, what are you doing for 3-9 at the time? And then give me a lesson learned from that.
Well, what I'm doing, so they put us in, they split the vehicles up, and I'm the forward left flank of the battalion. And, we're, called the Badger vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
We're sniper, air and artillery support, fire support vehicle for the left flank of the battalion as it moves up. And there's another vehicle on the right side. Guess who's in it?
Barrett, of course.
The same capability as Barrett. So that's what I do. And I also take the, you know, sometimes I bring the S3 up so we can see the battlefield better. I had the air officer in our vehicle at times. I had a guy named Kilpatrick in the vehicle. And then an RDFO also. So, you know, we shot a lot of artillery missions, shot a lot of air, did a lot of airstrikes, did some shooting, stuff like that. What was the other question you asked me?
Give me a lesson learned.
Sleep.
Really?
Yeah, so this,
that's
before,
you know what?
We went in.
That's a professional response. I mean, because, you know, you see so many guys, when they're out doing CACs at the time, right? They try to stay up for the whole thing. You know, the opso normally at the end of it is like this blithering idiot with dip dripping down his face and doesn't even know his own name. So that's a professional response, sleep.
So this guy comes to see the battalion. I don't remember what his name was, and I think he was a colonel. And he comes in and talks to us. He might have been the regimental colonel. I can't remember. But he comes in and he says some things to me that just really didn't make any sense until after the fight.
Right.
He goes, if you're standing up, sit down. If you're sitting down, lay down. If you're laying down and you're not doing anything, go to sleep. And I didn't think anything about it at that point until after we got done. And, you know, the Gulf War is only really around 3 days long.
Right.
I probably slept like an hour during that whole piece. And I was totally done. So, you know, great piece of advice, except for I didn't really understand it at the time. And I tell people all the time, is especially commanders, when they're out there, they need to get their sleep. They need to be refreshed. And if they don't, you know, if they don't sleep, that means their staff and their Marines don't sleep because, you know, they're trying to keep up with him.
Right. You know, it's interesting you say that because the first – when I don't sleep, and you know, some nights you try to sleep, but you can't, and then you wind up, you know, for whatever reason, you have stuff on your mind, be it family stuff at home or the events of the day that linger with you and you don't sleep well. And, the way I notice is the first thing that goes is my ability to do numbers, grid coordinates and like, what, say that again? Or, you know, to just do numbers quickly. It's the first sign that I've learned in myself that, man, I got to go get some sleep because I'm now it's degrading my brain and my ability to be a good thinker and a good decision maker. And I think that's one of the most important lessons you learn if you go to war is you got to sleep and you got to make sure your Marines sleep because if you don't, your decision making ability as a leader is one of the first things that gets compromised, and that's a bad thing.
Yep, I agree. And then the other piece is hygiene. You know, we in the Gulf War. Most of our Vietnam vet guys were gone. So everything we lost from Vietnam to the Gulf War was the little fine-tuned things like hygiene. Hey, you know, everybody got sick because they weren't washing their hands. They weren't freaking, you know, properly freaking, you know, disposing of their feces as well. And freaking, it was disgusting. I mean, there was flies. It was nasty. I mean, day, I got this, you know, as a company gunning, nobody could eat on the front of my vehicle because when you eat on the front of the vehicle, food gets on it and, you know, then flies get on it and this attracts flies and the nastiness. So it's one of those things that freaking just drive me crazy.
You know, and those are all, you know, you don't realize how smart they are. You know, when you're young, you just think it's stupid chicken shit. Like, why can't I eat here? Like, hey, get out of here with that nasty stuff. It's like, what's his problem? You know, why, yeah, everybody eats on the hood of the vehicle, right? And you don't realize till later, that, wow, there was wisdom in that. I was just too stupid to figure it out. You know, the best, I got great advice from a Vietnam veteran. I had a helicopter crash in my assembly area as a company commander up 29 Palm.
Wow.
Yeah. Pilot decapitated, co-pilot crushed to death, trying to save the crewman, the crew chief, and a corporal who just went along for the ride that day. And they all wind up dying. And so wasn't a good day. And my company gunny, a guy named Lance Y, walks up to me later in the day. He wasn't there when it happened. He showed up. And he said, and I'm the company commander. I'm sitting on a 29 Palms, September, sun's going down, really pretty evening. We had to provide security till the coroner came out because it's a crime scene, essentially, until he does his thing. So we've done that all day. And, you know, Marines struggling with it because, you know, it's the whole thing, you know, finding people's heads and stuff like that. It's nasty. And then trying to – and the worst part is guys trying to live, you're trying to save them, and it doesn't work. And it just sucks. And so he walks up to me, and I'm sitting on these cans of ammunition, and he says these crates, and he says – Skipper, how you doing? And I said, I'm all right. I said, but, you know, I really haven't thought about that much. He said, how are you doing? And I said, meaning, you know, me personally. And I said, you know, I've been busy. I haven't really thought about it. Why? And he said, well, you know, you're never getting over it. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, you'll never get over what happened today. He said, I heard about what happened. And, you know, he said, this will bother you for the rest of your life. And this is exactly what I said. I said, get the fuck out of here. I said, and he looked at me and he goes, what? And I said, I'm not exactly fucking sure, but I'm pretty fucking sure that the fucking therapist doesn't say that to the fucking patient right about fucking now. So why don't you leave me alone? And he said, no, you need to know that. Single best piece of advice I think I've ever got in my life. And that was in 1996. And I looked at him and I said, where did that shit come from? He said, from Vietnam guys. He said, I went through something similar, but not nearly like this. And they told me that, hey, man, it's going to bother you for the rest of your life. And when it does, just know that you're okay, man. You're okay. It's the price of being involved in this business, okay? There's going to be stuff that sticks to you. And I used to give that advice in Afghanistan because, you know, guys think they're damaged. They think they don't know. And when you tell them, hey, man, this is normal for this business, okay? And it comes from Gunnery Sergeant Lance Y that came from Vietnam. And you know, Sergeant Major, I know where did the Vietnam guys get that? From the Korean guys? Where did the Korean guys get that? World War II and World War, you know what I mean? It's just the oral history that you're talking about that we had lost. Guys telling you, hey, man, you got to wash your hands. Hey, you know, our waste, get serious about that. And, you know, eating on the hood of the Humvee, that ain't good because it's nasty. And this is what happens down the road. And so it's interesting. I think that oral tradition is huge in terms of combat savvy in the Marine Corps.
Yeah, I agree.
We're going to take a quick break. Sergeant Major of 2MEF joins us graciously this morning. We'll be back and talk to him. Continue our discussion on All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.